welcome to the Geek Night In, episode 36. I'm your host, Laura. I'm here today with Tilly.
Hi.
I'm also here with Gemma.
Hey, son.
And we're here, we're doing geeky stuff, and we didn't prepare a topic list before we started, so who knows how this episode's going to go. Hello, Gemma. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm the only one who's actually spoken, like, mentioned anything I've done. So I'm going to leave you to start.
Oh, are we going to start?
I'm going to be mean.
Okay, well, I can start because I kind of went away this week. So I realized since I've started writing about games full time, I've not really taken any time off. So since we last recorded, I took some time off and I went away for a weekend away. And for anyone that listens to one of the other podcasts, if you listen to the podcasts I do, like sometimes I'll give recommendations of podcasts I like to listen to. And one of them is the Digital Drift podcast, which I think is a fantastic movie reviews show, and I went and spent a weekend with a load of people from that podcast and listeners of that podcast and didn't do any work for a weekend. So
that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. Basically, it's lots of people who I see maybe once a year, and we spent a weekend, we watched Age of Ultron, and then we played board games and tabletop games for an entire weekend
without me.
I'm sorry, you had work and stuff. But
that,
yeah,
was the worst part.
So I don't know, before we, maybe a good starting point would be, Gemma, have you seen Age of Ultron?
I have not, and I was gonna dive in on that one actually. I keep meaning to get around to it. I'm gonna try and arrange.
Okay, we shall avoid spoiling anything for you then, but Tilly has seen it as well now, because I came back from seeing it and then went to see it a second time to see it with Tilly. What's your non-spoiler thoughts on it?
My babies. I love my babies. It's so nice to see them all playing nicely together. Like, rather than in the first Avengers where they were all at each other's throats all the time. It's just nice to see them playing nice.
It's nice to see the Avengers have some time in this film to be slightly more laid back and have more interactions that are not quite so adversarial with each other. Mm. And you get some really nice interplay with them, which I think's really enjoyable to see.
Joss Whedon is still a shit feminist.
Yeah, a little bit.
He can't write Captain America for shit. And my other criticism is there's a lot of interactions between two characters that are romantically coded, which don't need to be. It just comes completely out of nowhere. There was no setting up for it in the first film or any of the other films, so it feels really awkward and forced and out of place.
I will say this much for this film, any scenes in Age of Ultron involving the Hulk suffer from the fact that there was never a standalone Hulk film before the Avengers happened, or at least not one that fits within this canon.
No, it does fit the canon. It's just that it was a different actor.
It's a different actor, and it's tonally very different. And there are several times where the Marvel Cinematic Universe completely, like, contradicts the lore of the previous one. Like, there is no Marvel Cinematic Universe tonally consistent Hulk film. Mm. And that really, this film really suffers for that. Because, like, having watched both of the sort of Hulk movies of the last decade, neither of them feels like they led into this Hulk, and a lot of things to do with him feel like they come slightly out of nowhere. Like, I understand what comic influences they're drawing from, but it doesn't necessarily work terribly well, the stuff with the Hulk, which is a shame. Because I like what they try and do with him, but some of his stuff seems to come out of nowhere.
So to try and clarify that, I tracked them all down before going to see the film I genuinely call The Avengers now. I keep thinking of it as Avengers Assemble, but it was released in Sweden as The Avengers. it's a true title. So I only ever watched, I think it's The Incredible Hulk, which is the one with Edward Norton, which is the second one that was made, and which I think does have the Marvel tie-ins. Because I think it has something at the end.
It does, but equally, like, they switch up the actor and then they completely, like, they never acknowledge that film. And while that never really stood out in the first Avengers, during this Avengers, it really, really stands out that they are referencing a different set of canon to what they presented.
Because there was a bit of a shout-out in the Avengers, given that the Incredible Hulk did feature the whole super soldier serum type stuff.
But yeah,
I think that was the only link, and that's just like the completely blunt comics origin story. So,
again, to not spoil too much, it's a very fast-paced film. There is never any quiet moment. Like, make sure you go to the bathroom before you go see this film, because there is no good point to leave and quickly pop to the bathroom.
It was a really good thing, because I have the smallest, weakest bladder in existence. Like, I usually have to go to the loo, like, 4 times during a film. And my friend said to me before I went, make sure you go either before or after. Don't go during the film, because there is no good point. So I was like peeing literally all day and pacing myself with my drink. Like, I know there is no time for me to pee during this film.
And
so just
that, as much as that sounds like a problem, it's a credit to the film's pacing. It is a very fast paced film that does keep up its pacing and never lets down. And while that's not always perfect, like, it is a fast paced action film that has some really funny moments, and there's a lot of jokes that could very easily have been cringe inducing but somehow worked. And I generally really liked the film, other than some small nitpicky complaints that, like, I wasn't aware of them while watching the film. It was when stopping and thinking about it afterwards that I was like, yeah, it's not a perfect film.
They introduce a bunch of characters, and at the end, they sort of set up for a different set of Avengers. And what is it? Like, there's two of them that are straight white cis men. And the rest of them are all either women or people of color.
Well, are you considering the two people that were leading the others?
No.
When you're counting that two?
No, I'm not counting anyone from the old Avengers. There's two people who lead the new Avengers from the old Avengers, but I'm not counting them. All the new Avengers are, like, the majority of them are either women or people of color, and it's really cool.
Yeah, basically, they use this film was clearly written when they didn't think that Robert Downey Jr. would be refreshing his contract after this one finished. And it kind of nicely sets up for a direction that I kind of wish the Marvel Cinematic Universe had gone instead, which is the universe where it's like, hey, well, we tied up these storylines, so time for the diverse Avengers. And I kind of wish that we'd got to see that. Maybe we still will.
Yes.
In like 6 years when a spot opens up in the MCU.
It's really cool that, because from the original Avengers, the only one that I like is Captain America. Like, he's the only one whose films I sort of seek out to watch repeatedly. You know, like, I've seen the first Avenger and I've seen the Winter Soldier so many times. But the Iron Man films and Thor and, you know, everyone else's, I've only seen their films once. And some of them I've only been in the room while their films have been on. I'm just so uninterested. So it's nice that sort of when they set up the new Avengers, I was like, oh, I actually like all of these. That's really cool.
Hooray. So
I'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. But so other stuff that I experienced during my time away, I should talk about a couple of board games and things probably, because they're fun. I played a sort of tabletop RPG-esque board game thing called Eldritch Horror.
Which, I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, basically you have to go around the globe trying to complete objectives in order to stop a Cthulhu-esque beast from being revived and essentially just destroying the world. And it's all about sort of collecting clues and collecting all these sort of abilities to power up your character, while maintaining both their health and their sanity.
Okay, yeah. I think it's one of the precursors to quite a few other games which I have played. Things like Elder Sign and Dracula Like, if you mix Eldest Iron and Dracula, you'll get Eldritch Horror by the sounds of
Yeah,
it.
it's a smaller, more easily accessible counterpart to a game called Arkham Horror, which is basically a very similar game, but much larger and more complex and more daunting to get into. But no, I found it a fairly accessible game to get into. It was very enjoyable. It was a lot of sort of, you have this deck of cards for various instances, so every turn you'll like turn over a card, it'll be like, hey, this thing's going on, roll however many dice against whatever skill you've got, and as you power up your skills, it basically increases the number of dice you get to roll when you're checking against that skill, and you usually only need to get one, like, one of your dice has to get a passing number. So it's like, okay, I pump up this skill, now I've got more dice to roll to try and get one of them to be a 5 or a 6. And yeah, it was just a very interesting, like, it boiled down a lot of the things about like a D&D type game into some very sort of easily digestible numbers. And I really enjoyed it. I'd love to play it again. So I'm looking to maybe pick up a copy sometime in the near future. And then the
we
other one...
We can play at Nine Worlds.
Yeah, we could play at Nine Worlds if I can get a copy. And the other one that I really enjoyed was a game called Whitechapel, which if anyone listening to the podcast has ever played a board game called Scotland Yard, it is incredibly similar to Scotland Yard. So you have a board that is essentially a map of London that has numbered, like, circular spaces and some square spaces, and you are playing as, like, one person plays as Jack the Ripper, and everyone else plays as police officers. And there are four nights where four murders are committed, one, like, on each night, and Jack the Ripper has to commit his murder, you know where he's committed his murder, and then he has to get back to his base without being found. And he doesn't have a game piece on the board, but he writes down privately which spaces he moves each turn. And as the police officers, you can't see where Jack the Ripper is, but every turn, wherever you are, you can, like, you can investigate if he's been on any of your adjoining, like, the spaces around your space recently. Mm-hmm. So you have to try and, like, before he gets back to his base, you have to attempt to piece together some semblance of the route he took from the murder site back to his base. So you start like, okay, well, we'll go to the murder site because we know he'll have had to move somewhere from here. We check all the spaces around the murder site. Okay, he went this way. But obviously he's moving faster than you can track him. And by the end of the fourth night, you basically have to work out as best you can where on the map his base is, stop him from getting back to it, and attempt to make arrests and hope that he's on the square that you attempt to make arrests on. It's a really interesting game because it's... I like the games where it's like, hey, here is one person being really, like, devious, and everyone else that is ganging up trying to be like, right, we have far less information than this person has, but we will outwit them, haha.
Yeah, again, that sounds like Dracula, and just for the sake of, if people are finding these sorts of games interesting, I would like to sort of put this one forwards. I'm actually shortening the name somewhat, and I can't quite remember what the full title is. It's like the Rise of Dracula or something like that. I apologize. There's probably somebody screaming the name at it. But that's kind of similar in that one player is Dracula and you're on a map of Europe and you play as Mina Harker, Van Helsing and Dr. Seward, just sort of going around trying to pin down his location before he can claim three vampire brides, I think it is. But you can use railways and fast travel networks, whereas Dracula can't. And he's also quite vulnerable at sea. Mm. So he can't get to and from Britain without putting himself pretty much at great risk, which is true to the book.
This does sound very similar to Scotland Yard, which is, again, a very similar game where it's, hey, someone is a criminal and you're trying to catch them. The difference in how Scotland Yard's done to Whitechapel is that on this version of London, because it's set in the modern day, you've got various modes of public transport. So,
oh, hello.
Public transport. So each turn, like, you can't tell where Mr. X, the criminal, has gone, but you get told every turn what mode of public transport he used. And he has a certain number of times that he can, like, keep his mode of transport hidden and things like that. But basically it is a case of you're trying to track him based on the potential route he might have taken on public transport.
Mm.
And you have a certain number of, like, you have tokens. So it's like, well, I can only use, like, this mode of transport this many times and so on. But yeah, I like these kind of one person is moving around the board and you don't know exactly where they are and you've got to try and work out where they are. I like those games. I find them fun.
Yeah. So it's good. It's a matter of investigating their trail or positioning yourself strategically so that you can investigate places near you. Yeah, I like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm very interested. I want to pick up Whitechapel if I get a chance down the line because I had a lot of fun with that as well. So, yeah. So let's have, are you with us, Tilly?
Yes.
Do you have anything you'd like to talk about this week?
Not really. I haven't done much.
You've been playing a lot of games on your phone.
I've been playing Plague a lot.
Okay, tell us about Plague, because I don't think you've talked about Plague on the podcast yet.
Oh, it's just this, it's a game where you play as a bacteria. And you have to evolve yourself to become a plague and destroy the world, basically. Which is, it's really cool because it's like...
Nice goals.
Yeah, you have to kill everyone in the world.
It's basically a case of, like, you've got to increase, like, how you're transmitted from person to person or what kind of things you do that make them ill. And you want to infect lots of people before they realize they're ill, so they don't start shutting down ports.
Well, you want to... It's like a strategy game, because if you start killing people too quickly, then... or if you make your disease too scary, like you hurt and kill people in horrible ways, then
they put
research on a cure is, like, really highly prioritized. So by the time you've infected maybe half the world, you're cured, basically. So, yeah, I've gotten really good at it because I play it, like, all the time.
Yeah, you are so good at murdering the world. Nobody stands a chance against Tilly.
It's quite cool because you can unlock other pathogen types as you go through. So after bacteria, you get virus. And then after virus is... what is it? Fungus, which is the one I'm trying to beat now.
I will just say, I apologize if you can hear there's a subwoofer, like a big, very bassy speaker in the pub downstairs, that I can feel it vibrating my feet, and I don't know if the microphone's picking it up. But yeah.
I can feel it in my ears, yes.
Yeah, sorry about that, listeners. Not much we can do about it, but it's usually karaoke night on a Sunday, but this doesn't...
Whoa.
Yeah, this doesn't feel like karaoke. This is... We are two floors up and we can feel the speaker.
That is nuts.
I feel like we might need to go downstairs and say, hey, can you turn down the bass? But yeah, you can unlock different pathogen types, you were saying.
Yes. So I'm working on fungus at the moment because fungus is hard to spread. It just sort of, you choose your starting country, and I usually choose the UK because wealthy countries, you can, things spread quite easily. Once you evolve it to be antibiotic resistant, it spreads quite easily because they have a lot of airports and seaports and, you know, they do a lot of trade. So I usually start in the UK.
You just have to be very cautious of countries like Madagascar that only have, like, their one port. Where it's like, if they catch wind, they will lock off their ports and you'll never make them ill.
Yeah, it's the iPhone version of, I think it's called Pandemic on the PC. And then on the PC, I used to play it a lot, and Madagascar and Greenland are the two that are so hard to infect, but they're a lot easier to infect on the iPhone, especially when you play as a virus.
Yeah, so that's a good game. Like, I used to enjoy playing Pandemic on the PC, so I may have to pick this up on the phone at some point. What's this version called, did you say?
Plague.
Plague, and that's a free one, is it?
No.
No?
I think it was like $149.
Oh no, $149. It's going to break the bank.
It's cray cray.
Gemma, you've not really talked yet this podcast. Gemma, what have you been doing?
Well, I've kind of not I want to talk because I've just had an amazingly geeky weekend. And I won't linger on yesterday too long because I've already spoken about Lightsaber Combat Academy a couple of times.
What's happening,
we did
Tilly?
do an outdoor session.
I was just going to say, please tell me about the Star Wars stuff, the lightsaber combat. Please tell me more about
Tilly
that.
Tilly missed it, so she's happy to listen to you talk about it again. Sorry, listeners, you're going to have to listen to this twice.
Tell me everything.
Tell us more about lightsaber combat.
Well, there's an opportunity to plug episode 35 of a podcast called The Geek 19.
Yeah, do we need to make Tilly listen to our back catalogue?
I've forgotten how
highlights for me.
I can do, because actually we didn't learn anything new this session. It was like a special session added in out in a park, partly because it was glorious weather, and also partly as a kind of, it definitely gets people interested in a sport when they turn up at a park and start wielding lightsabers, and you get particularly the kind of, now it's summer in Sweden, a lot of people are just going to parks with beers and barbecues. It's amazing the amount of like grills and stuff people had down there. And yeah, they're all there spectating. In the case of us younglings, it was kind of more like just wielding lightsabers and swinging them around in interesting fashions. But our instructor and his brother, who is actually his brother took on our instructor as his Padawan, they were both there and did a couple of really spectacular duels as well with, like, I think mixtures of three or four different styles because of the way that lightsaber combat is divided into styles. And I actually took a bunch of photos of this. I've been putting them around Flickr, so you can find them on my Twitter page at Raygun Goth if anyone's interested, just to see what it looks like. But yeah, so we had 4 hours straight of dueling with lightsabers and people coming up to us and saying, "This looks awesome, how can I do this thing?" Which is surprising nobody.
So if you'd been using actual lightsabers that cut through arms and cauterize wounds, how many of your limbs would you have lost?
Well, I believe Anton, our resident Darth Vader, because he actually goes to events as Darth Vader, he'd have lost his leg about 5 times over, I think. I'd have lost the fingers of my right hand. And I think it claimed a few body parts flying around. But thankfully, what we use is a plastic, fairly sturdy but flexible plastic on the end of a lightsaber. So if you get hit enough times in the same place, you will bruise. But otherwise, it doesn't actually, like, chop off and cauterize limbs.
That's good. That is definitely a good
thing.
That
is convenient.
You don't want to have chopped off cauterized limbs when you're learning.
Also, it's much harder to like set up Skype to do a podcast if you don't have limbs.
Indeed.
It
yes.
makes it more difficult. Not impossible, but more difficult.
The only sad thing is that because it was blazing sunshine yesterday, of course there was absolutely no point in us turning the lightsabers on. So none of us had like the coloured LEDs lit. So we were just going around with like really surprisingly reflective white lightsabers, but still, people got the message. And it's one of these things that it looks visually impressive. If you're dueling with lightsabers, even if we only know 3 moves.
Yeah, it's people will stop for just a short enough amount of time that they look at you and think that you're all super cool. It's like, no, we are the younglings. Do not use us as a barometer for quality.
Actually, it's surprising how many. Well, no, I suppose it wasn't surprising, really. How many people came up to us like wanting photos of themselves holding our lightsabers? which we did. It was kind of a promotional thing for the clan, but yeah,
that's cool.
But it was also just really fun going at each other with lightsabers for a few hours.
Yeah, I can imagine. So what else did you do with your super super geeky weekend that you're all excited about?
Well, once I recovered, because exercise is not a natural state for me, so I ended up like rather sore, I went along to Stockholm's Internationella Seria Festival, which is their international comics festival. It's held annually at Kulturhuset, which is where they also have the comics library, which I've mentioned before. And it's very different to what I was expecting. It's and yet familiar. So it's international insofar as it's mostly European comics either being sold, or they get quite a lot of creators. They get a lot of panelists and special guests talking about their works, but they're almost always kind of independent-like, basically because comics is like Marvel, DC, other American publishers as the mainstream. British comics have reached a certain amount, like in terms of scale and economy and things, but for the rest of Europe, particularly in like non-English languages, you end up with quite a different independent sort of vibe. But it felt nice for it, because there's a really nice atmosphere around the place. It felt more like the science fiction conventions I know from the UK. So it's the sort of place where you find people of all genders wandering around in all sorts of other genders, clothing and things like that. Not so much cosplay, possibly because European comics, again, the characters aren't quite as recognisable. There are only a couple of manga stalls, for example, which was nice in a way, because again, comics culture has sometimes ends up bombarded a bit by manga, I feel. And yeah, I didn't get much from the talks, admittedly, because most of them are in Swedish. However, they did have a couple of American guests talking in English.
So you went to those talks, it's like, this is for me, all you Swedish people, now it's your turn to suffer the language barrier.
Well, actually, not so much. I feel bad about this in a way, but actually I was just being shown around by my friend, who I should give a shout out to, my friend Mary, who volunteers at the festival.
Hi, Mary, we think you're awesome. Woo!
She also comes to Lightsaber Combat Academy, by the way. Yeah, she was showing me around, and sort of because she's a volunteer, she knows everyone there. So it's very much like, particularly the... Actually, I should sidetrack a bit. One of the things I came away from is the fact that a lot of the comics are feminist press. So there are a lot of really awesome, like, female empowerment sorts of things going on. Also a lot of nudity. There are a lot of, like, women laid back with tops on, but, like, nothing below kind of thing. And just like, yeah, okay. But then having somebody who knows the creators and just be able to go up and say, like, well, this is my friend Gemma. It's like, hi. yeah, it's all just a nice and different world.
Nudity, Gemma. Yeah. Gemma, nudity. Nice to meet you both.
Not so much in that vibe. I actually ended up picking up a comic, which really drew my eye. It's called I Hate London, with the subtitle Jag Hatar London.
This sounds so unpatriotic, Gemma. I am surprised.
Well, what mostly drew me is the fact it's a bilingual comic, and it says so at the top. Oh. So it's actually written in Swedish and English.
Oh, that's really nice.
And it is by Yvette Gustafsson, who seems to have made this during a 24-hour comics day, which, having read this, it does seem like they do comics creation jams.
That seems like a cool thing.
Yeah. And I must admit, like, the artwork quality in this is amazing. Like, it boggles the mind to think somebody could draw this. It is, of course, black and white, but to be drawn within 24 hours, it's quite extraordinary. And yeah, I mean, it's not like spewing hate at London. It's an autobiographical story of when she visited London to try and find, like, illustrator opportunities and generally find work, given that Stockholm is quite a small scene. I visited the Swedish scene today. But yeah, it's nice, and I really like the bilingual approach. Given that it's a story of a Swede turning up in London, it definitely fits. So it's a nice learning exercise.
Yeah, it's a nice thing that you can read through and be like, yes, I can test my understanding, and when I don't understand a word, it's there in English.
So it's not something I've actually read yet. I mean, I'm about halfway through it, so I've only brought it back, and I've had a few hours before we're podcasting. I also don't know how easy it would be to get a hold of if anyone's interested, but she does have a Patreon. Supporting her main thing, which seems to be called Zack och Ting, which seems to be Swedish language, actually, looking at it. But she's on Patreon as patreon.com/AJWETT.
Yeah.
AG Wet, I
guess. Cool creators to go look up and see if you want to support their work if you understand Swedish.
Yeah. And based on what I've read so far of this story, that I really like it. It's kind of, it's actually kind of typically Swedish. It's wry, not quite humor. It's also not quite sarcastic in a way. It's hard to describe Swedish comic humor, but this is it. and yeah, it's I Hate London.
I'm just going to take that out of context and just like send that to, like, I don't know, the head of all the public transport committees in London. Just be like, I know you have no concept of who this person is, but she hates London. So, you know, don't let her look at your public transport anymore.
But this has me wanting to make a game or a Twine or something about, like, going from Britain to Sweden now.
Do it! It's a thing that you have knowledge in that other people do not.
I could talk about the trains I took to get here. Yeah.
Of course you'd write about the trains.
So yeah, that was my geeky weekend, basically. I very much enjoyed the comics festival. And if people... I know of at least one Stockholm-based listener, so I can tell at least that person to see the festival if they don't already know about it.
Right.
It's at Kulturhuset.
That sounds very cool. Yeah. What else have I got to talk about? I'm trying to have a think now. I haven't been playing any new video games this week. I've been doing a lot of playing video games that I've played before or have been meaning to finish or that I want to replay. Lots of old stuff. So I think the short list is I finished off Majora's Mask on the 3DS this week. I then realised, oh, I still have a craving for Zelda, so I started playing Skyward Sword on the Wii. I have been playing The World Ends With You, which was a DS game. What else have I been playing?
Interesting title. What's that one about?
Let's talk about The World...
Me pouncing.
Oh, that's all right, yeah. The World Ends With You was a game for the original DS that you are playing as sort of typical anime RPG hero type person in Japan, and you wake up in the middle of the street and you don't quite know what's happened. It's like, wait, I was walking around and suddenly I must have lost consciousness. Now I'm in the middle of the street in Shibuya, and you've got a counter counting down on your hand from 60 minutes down, and it's like, yep, get to this place, and you're not entirely sure why. And then it's like, oh yeah, if you don't do this, you're gonna get erased from existence. You've been locked into a game. You did not ask for this. You do the things you're tasked with before the timer runs out, or you are going to die. And I think the most interesting thing about this game, it's got a fantastic soundtrack and stuff, but it has a really interesting combat system. So it's a DS game, and you, at all times in combat, are fighting with two characters at once. And both of them are, like, in a parallel version of the same fight. And the way that you do your fight is that you control the character on the top screen by using the D-pad. So you sort of do left, right, up, down, or whatever to go through rhythmic commands and to fight on the top screen. Or you use the touch screen on the bottom screen to also fight. And there's this interesting mechanic where basically there is a glowing green orb that passes between the character on the top and bottom of the screen. So you get incentivized, like, okay, you can keep just fighting with one of the characters, and like, you're fighting the same enemy on both top and bottom screen. If you kill it on one screen, it dies on the other screen. But it's like, you get a power boost for using whichever character has the orb and getting it to pass back. So the incentive is, keep switching up which control scheme you use and how you're fighting this same character, this same enemy, by switching between D-pad and touchscreen controls to fight the same battle on two screens at once. And I don't have the coordination for that battle system. I'm not good at this game. I love it. I think it's fantastic. but I remember going back to it this week why I didn't finish it the first time round, which is I don't have the coordination. So we'll see if I get further this time, but I'm like an hour and a half in and I'm already like, yep, this is out of my depth.
This sounds really interesting, and I just looked it up on Wikipedia because, yeah, and I think it's worth mentioning that actually Square Enix's efforts on DS seem to be really quite grabbing for me, because the I'm not much of a fan of JRPGs generally. I never got past the first disc on Final Fantasy VII. That's my secret shame. I've never completed that game. I've had it spoiled, but but one of the things I really loved was Bravely Default on 3DS.
I was about to make that recommendation if you didn't say it.
Yeah, and again, I think with that, the soundtrack is really one of my key grabs, because I love the soundtrack on that. Sadly, it costs like £50 to buy the soundtrack. But one day, maybe.
Bravely Default's a really interesting 3DS RPG. For anyone who doesn't know anything about it, it's not perfect by any means. Like, the structure of the game is that, like, you complete a series of dungeons and then it basically makes you repeat them a couple of times. It's not great in that respect. But it does some really interesting stuff. Like, you can set the encounter rate for random battles from anywhere from 0% to 200%. So if you particularly want to grind levels, you can whack up the encounter rate so that you're fighting monsters more frequently and that you're level grinding. If you're running out of health and you just want to get back to a town to heal and you don't want to get annoyed with random battles, or you just want to explore the dungeon and get a lay of what the land's like without having to stop every 2 seconds while you're getting your bearings, you can just turn off the random battles and you won't get experience, but you can just, you can control the percentage of random battles as you wish. And like, it does a load of little neat things that are really interesting.
I quite like the actual Bravely Default, like, titular mechanic, I guess.
Oh, yes.
The idea that you can set your characters to be basically damage sponges for, like, up to 3 turns, and then have them let loose with basically limit breaks, I guess. But the fact you can control the limit breaks, in heavy inverted commas, like that, feels really satisfying. And it's one of these rare occasions where I actually enjoy repeatedly trying a boss encounter or a level. This is the thing I dislike about JRPGs. If I'm in an RPG, I want it to be relatively linear. I don't want to have to repeat the same efforts and try different tactics. Because I personally find that quite dissatisfying. I like to think I can come up with a strategy and just apply it. But it's Bravely Default, somehow the fact it's so accessible means that I can swap around the different tactics I'm using and it still feels satisfying.
Yeah, it is a very nice RPG, I will give it that. But yeah, it's a good game. But I've been doing a lot of, like, I tried to replay that game. I've been playing some Xenoblade on the 3DS, which was a RPG on the Wii that I'm replaying. Lots of replaying games that I've already played. That has been most of my week. I've not really done much else.
That's fair enough. I mean, all I've been doing is game-wise is still playing City Skylines. So I think Tilly's outdone us on the gaming front.
Yeah, you're outshining us. You're playing something you haven't played before. Whereas I'm just like, I'll play more of my stupid things.
Sorry, I haven't really been listening. I sort of tapped out when the game stuff started happening.
You never acknowledge that. You're just like, what you're supposed to do is say, oh yes, I was listening. I was paying attention. Yes, oh yes.
Well, actually, this opportunity for me to ask, how is the writing going?
It's going really well. This week has been really good for my writing.
You wrote like 10,000 plus words this week?
Yeah, I wrote about 11,000 words this week.
How many A4 pages are you up to now?
60.
Blimey.
Yeah, so it's going really well. Obviously, it still needs work. I've sent it out to my beta reader who hasn't got back to me yet. But
you haven't sent it out
soon.
To me to read.
Sorry, I keep forgetting.
I live in the flat with you. How do you forget?
I sent it to my mum, but she hasn't read it yet because it's so huge.
Well, if you'd sent it to me, I'd have read it.
All right, I'll fucking send it to you then. Jesus.
Love you.
So, yeah, I mean, I found that I write a lot better when I'm not at home. So sort of on my days off and things, I've been dragging Laura out to Costa, which is across the road, and I've been like, right, let's sit here and write.
And I really don't mind that, because any excuse to get out of the same four walls that I write in is quite nice.
Mm.
It's the downside to working from home. It's like, oh no, the same four walls all day. Well, actually, not even the same four walls, the same window and screens. It's like, I am looking at this wall all day. Hooray!
I'm quite looking forward to Nine Worlds, though, because I think I've mentioned before I have a trans woman character in my book. And I'm really struggling with acknowledging that she's trans without being offensive. You know?
Sounds like you need our LGBTQ plus 101 panel.
Yeah.
Woo! Coming to Nine Worlds this year, courtesy of me.
It's coming this year. But yeah, last year they had a panel that would have been really helpful, except for that one fucking woman that Kate will completely... remember. You weren't even there.
You've told me about this and I remember this story.
It was... they had an author in who... has written books with sort of non-binary transgender characters, LGBT... plus characters, and she did a talk, and then they opened the floor to people to ask questions, and obviously a lot of people were like, I want to include a trans character, but I don't know how to do that without being offensive, you know. And it turned into this really interesting sort of back and forth between writers, in that there were writers who were like, oh, I've done that and this is how I did it, and you know, oh, it might fit really well to do this. And this one fucking woman put her hand up and was like, excuse me, can we talk about something other than trans stuff now? I'm like, no.
Oh, God. Some of the audience people at Nine Worlds can occasionally be like that. Like, there was one bit of feedback for an LGBT representation in games panel I was on a few years back at Nine Worlds, where someone was like, where are all the lesbians? It's like, here... And it's like, no, you're trans, shut up. And I'm like, well, I can be both. It's like, no, where are the lesbians? I'm like, but.
It wasn't a panel about, was it a panel about sexuality? It was a panel about sexuality, actually.
It was gender and sexuality. It was
LGBT it was like feminist issues and LGBT representation. And she was like, where are all the lesbians? And I was like, well, here, no, not you, where's the actual lesbians? But what?
But yeah, last year as well they had a group that went on till really late called Feedback Among Friends.
Was this the one we had to stay on Louise's floor because of?
Yeah, because it got to like 11 and we were like, oh shit, we need to head off, we're gonna miss the last tube, and we'd already missed it.
No, we'd missed the last bus was the problem, and then we realised, oh, we've missed the last bus and we can't walk to the tube before the last tube now.
Yeah, but anyway, it was really helpful. So I'd really like to get people's opinions there, because there are a lot of people who are writing things with non-binary and trans people in it. So at the moment, I'm just sort of writing it, and then I can go back and edit, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, in my mind, I know that she's a trans woman, and hopefully that comes across in my writing. Like, if... I think what my beta reader told me is that knowing that she's a trans woman, you can pick up on it reading it. But before I told her, she didn't know.
So, I feel like that's a good thing, actually, because you are walking this line between making an identifiable character, but also keeping it nice and subtle. I struggle to think of an example, but I have seen this done somewhere where knowing that the character was trans... like going in with that knowledge outside of the piece revealed certain things, but it feels like that's the only decent way to do it sometimes.
The only sort of downside that
I don't want to do like a Dumbledore representation, like I don't want to publish it and then be like, oh, by the way, this character is
that's,
trans.
That's
like,
what I was, that's what
I want it to come across straight away. So I'm at the moment, what I'm going with is sort of some sort of throwaway comment, you know, but I can't think of something. Because it's so reviled, I guess, in real life that you would never sort of tell someone in a throwaway comment.
Well, if you want to see throwaway comments of how to do it, like my go-to Dragon example. Age. Yeah, it's still the Dragon Age
yes,
example.
Yes, I know, but I can't think of anything that clever. Not that funny. I'm not that smart. I can't come up with stuff like that.
For anyone that doesn't know, there's a great example for if people
we
are looking...
We talked about it on the podcast before.
Okay, well, I'm just bringing it up because it seemed relevant to this conversation. The character of Krem in Dragon Age Inquisition, there is a really cleverly done, like, very humorous line for their reveal as the trans man, which was very well handled. But, like, what I was going to say was... the problem you have when writing a character subtly and if you know, then it implies that like it adds something to the reading, etc., is that you then have this situation where people will complain because it's like, well, I think it's a trans character. Well, I don't. And you then have to confirm it outside of the piece of media, which then gets into like, well, if it wasn't confirmed within the media, then it's not canon, blah, blah, blah. There are downsides to the approach.
Yeah, because I do want it to be subtle. And, like, I think my problem with Dragon Age as a template is that it's quite defensive, I guess, to me. The way that the characters talk about it, I don't give a damn if it's a little harder for him to piss standing up and stuff like that. It's like... Mm. It comes across as quite aggressive, and in this world that I've sort of built, gender is sort of a non-issue, it's perfectly normal for people to experiment between one gender and another and experiment with pronouns and things like that. So there's not really anything to be that aggressive about.
Well, it doesn't need to necessarily be aggressive. Like,
well,
the point...
exactly. I don't want it to be aggressive.
No.
But Dragon Age is quite aggressive in the way it puts
I would
across.
Disagree. Like, the point I was trying to make about Dragon Age is, like, the when Krem brings that information out themselves, the sort of context is less about themselves and more to do with, hey, you've got man boobs. Do you need help with a binder? Because I can help you with a binder because you've got some man boobs going on.
Yeah, I suppose that
would
work.
Like, and that's sort of a very lighthearted way of doing it. It's like Krem doesn't actively say, hey, I'm a trans man, but it's like, hey, natural born man, you have big man boobs. Do you want help with a binder? Because I can help you with that because you've got big man boobs. I'm going to laugh at you. And I thought that was an interesting way of doing it.
I think you do raise an interesting point there, though, Tilly, that... sorry, I don't mean to sound so surprised. That's terrible.
Tilly, you're interesting. Holy shit. Okay. I have the same reaction loads of times. Carry on.
Yeah, I feel like it is done defensively quite often. That's something I never really thought about before, but you're right in that defensiveness can sound... naturally aggressive somehow for the wrong reasons, and that tends to put people off.
I think a lot of that is rooted in narratives that are built with some semblance of trying to resemble actual trans experiences in some ways informs like a lot of the natural assumptions about the way that people write trans characters, and that you end up with a lot of defensive and then sort of, as you said, aggressive through defensiveness reactions just in the way that they're generally written. That is a bit of a natural problem with how most people write those scenes.
Yeah, and it introduces conflict at a point where, particularly if you want the character to just be like matter of fact, they happen to be trans, combat, like verbal combat, is no way to introduce that sort of concept.
Because we've discussed back and forth, because you've had like various ideas of how to do it in the past, and like I'm kind of glad that that's where you've settled, the idea of like not wanting to be confrontational.
Yeah, because
like some of your earlier ideas were like the, well, I accidentally saw that you are not what we thought you are. Ah, it's like...
Well, I mean, that's the sort of go-to, isn't it?
It's what most everyone... media uses as the go-to, yeah.
So obviously, you know, I'm not proud of it, but, you know, all this... Everyone's got an amount of inbuilt cis sexism, And I guess that's sort of just how mine came out, was this, like, ah, you're not what I thought you were.
Well, it's like the first way that you thought of writing that scene was to be like, hey, someone accidentally saw she has a penis.
No, it wasn't. It was scars. Was but then oh, I no, thought, was... where are the scars going to
be? Yeah, you were like, where are the scars going to be? It's like, well, that works with a trans man because, you know, like, mastectomy scars maybe. But it's like, well, there's not necessarily going to be scars unless you're looking at the genitals.
Yeah, and I'm not about to write a sex scene, so. So, yeah, it's just, it's stuff like that. I sort of wish that there were more good examples of trans people in media, because trying to be a good example is really hard when you don't have good examples of
your
own.
Well, you should come to all of the panels at the LGBTQ plus track at Nine Worlds this year, because we're going to be talking about so many good examples from various bits of media of representation. Woo! I ran out of breath there doing my self-promotion sentence.
Yeah, I guess, actually, speaking of it, I need to make the gender a bit... I need to make the gender fluidity of the world a bit more obvious. Because, again, I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, I don't think I've actually written any of that down.
Yeah, you should probably do that.
I should probably go back through and just mention that a couple of times.
Oh, goodness. So
I just thought you should probably... Have we actually mentioned the fact that your responsibilities at Nine Worlds, Laura?
I don't know if we have. So if you haven't picked up on it already, I am the head of the LGBTQ track this year at Nine Worlds. So I am in charge of working out what panels we're doing and planning the panels and putting people on the panels and getting people to talk about stuff. So I'm still kind of working all that out. It's the next couple of weeks are going to be head down sorting everything. But... yeah, do you want to talk about LGBTQ plus stuff at Nine Worlds? Email lgbtq@nineworlds.co.uk. Send me a pitch and I will look at them and maybe get you to talk at the convention.
Do the thing, because talking at Nine Worlds is awesome.
Yeah, it's a lovely convention.
It is great. I hate public speaking, but actually I really enjoyed the one panel that I did at Nine Worlds last year.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I did two.
What was the other one? You did the If the Doctor Was a Woman and...
And I did the one about the game jam.
Oh, yeah. You stepped onto the one where I was
I pretended to be someone else. Yeah, we played the games like the night before.
One of the people on my panel couldn't turn up, so it's like, Tilly, you need to pretend you know about indie games. Play these indie games. You did a really good job of that.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I played these. I knew what was happening. Because Laura didn't explain to me the premise of the panel. She was just like, oh, we need to play these through so you can be on this panel tomorrow. And I was like, oh, okay. And then we got to the panel, and I think it was Tim who was moderating, and he was like, oh, so this is about the game jam of blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what?
It's like, this is about those games we played last night.
I was just like, oh, okay. Good.
Oh, goodness. And with that, now seems like a good place to start wrapping up for this week. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. Time to do self-promotion and the such. So Gemma, if people like listening to you and want to know more about the things you do, where can they find the things you do?
Well, you can't currently listen to me in any other form. As much as I'm considering other things, I haven't started them yet. So you can basically see what I spew into Twitter at RayGunGoth. I link to my website from there, and that's where you can find pretty much all my other things. I'm also on Patreon, just as Reagan Goth, just trying to raise funds to do more for diversity, because sadly, capitalism means I have to put a roof over the head in order to do things like
capitalism.
Accessible game jams.
Capitalism sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like the game jam I'll be doing next weekend. What is it I'll be doing? I'm helping out. Che Hack are running mostly female game jam, particularly for young girls at Stockholm's Royal College of Technology.
People should check that out. Yeah.
They'll be spewing press and stuff about that, because people like EA Dice have been tweeting about it, like, do this event. I'm like, yeah.
So Tilly, what about you? Where can people find you and your stuff on the internet?
Well, you can find me posting pictures of my cat on Twitter.
Early Morning Cat Club is back.
at Gathering Tilly, which is, yeah, mainly me posting pictures of my cat, but he's really cute, so.
He was in a box today, then he looked confused.
I think I post about 3 a day, on average. And you can find my book on Patreon at patreon.com/valencekiller.
How much of the book can people currently see there?
You can see up to chapter 4.
Ooh, up to chapter 4. Do you want to see up to 4 chapters of a book? Then you should go check out that Patreon.
Yeah, and it's anything. It's pay per chapter, and I'm trying to release 1 chapter per month at the moment. But this month I'm going to be releasing like 3. So, yeah.
Time to get in at the ground floor. Yeah.
Yeah, get in now and you'll see so many chapters.
So many.
Yeah. So, you can find me on Twitter at Laura K. Buzz. That's where all of my stuff is. It's Laura K. Buzz on everything, on iTunes, on Google, on Twitter, on Patreon. That's what keeps the lights on, patreon.com/LauraKBuzz. Go give that money. So, yeah, thank you very much for listening, and we'll have another episode for you again soon. Bye.
Bye.